Let's turn, please, to the book of Deuteronomy this morning. Deuteronomy chapter 8. This is a new year. We are still sort of on the cusp of this new year. And as we move into the month of January and into the new year, I remember thinking this way last year. Think, oh, it's the second week of the year already. Oh, a month of the year is gone already. And then I don't remember thinking any of it until it was the last month of the year. It just goes so quickly. And now we're in a position of looking back and looking ahead, as we often do at this time of year. And I would like to look at a few chapters in Deuteronomy, which perhaps would encourage us as we move ahead into this new year. Chapter 8, I'll begin reading a few verses. Of course, the words are those of Moses as he speaks the words of the Lord, the instructions of the Lord, and reviews them for the people of Israel. It's a book of review, isn't it? Because all of those who are hearing the words of Moses were at least 19 years old at the oldest, or younger, when they first left the land of Egypt. It was only in the second year when they attempted, or when they were sent into the land of promise and refused. And so now all those at that time who were 20 years old and upward, they have died in the wilderness, except for Joshua and Caleb and Moses, of course. And so it is a book of review, and he's reviewing for them what it is that they should keep in mind as they move into this new phase of their lives that the Lord has for them. And so in that way, it is kind of suited for this idea of reviewing and looking forward. So we'll start with verse 1 and read a few selected verses here and there. Verse 1 of Deuteronomy chapter 8 in the Chapel Bible. This is page 282. Every commandment which I command you today, you must be careful to observe, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers. And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble you and test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. Your garments did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. You should know in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord your God chastens you. Therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs that flow out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing. A land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills you can dig copper. When you have eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. First, as we review this passage, I'd like to point out that we have this phrase several times. You can just scan with your eyes and see it. The Lord your God. The Lord your God. It's actually a very unique phrase in the book of Deuteronomy. It's used number of times in the Old Testament, but it's used many, many times. I think at least half the times in the Old Testament where we have this phrase, we find in the book of Deuteronomy. And it's just a nice thought to consider. The Lord your God. Jehovah your God. Jehovah, the one who has made a covenant with your fathers, the one who has promised that he will fulfill, he has made promises and he will fulfill his promises, the one who is the covenant-keeping God. Jehovah is your God. Jehovah, your Elohim. Elohim, the one who says, let there be light. The one who looks at disorder and brings order. The one who looks at emptiness and forms something where there was nothing. The Lord, your God. He is the one who is emphasized over and over in Deuteronomy, not just in this chapter, although in this chapter I think we've read it maybe four or five times, just in these 12 verses, and it continues. And there's this one point which helps them to look back, and then there's this other point which helps them to look ahead. In verse 2, it says, remember that the Lord your God led you all the way. Remember that the Lord your God led you all the way. Think about, if you can remember, what life was like a year ago. The questions that we might have had, the decisions that we knew were on the horizon, the uncertainties, what's going to happen in this aspect of life, what's going to take place with these people in my life, what's going to take place financially in my life, what's going to take place spiritually with the assembly of believers that we fellowship with, or for the Christian testimony at large in our region or in the world. What is it that's going to happen in 2018? Well, now we can look back. We know everything that happened in 2018. We may not always know why things happened in 2018, but we know everything that happened in 2018 that has affected us. But the Lord, your God, led you all the way. Where would we point to something in our experience in 2018 where we said, that moment, the Lord wasn't with me? When could we point to that? When could we find a time where the Lord really abandoned me on May 12th? That never happened. There's never a moment in the entire year behind us where we'd say, Lord, where were you? We have many hymns that say that sometimes there may be darkness that passes between us. I think we maybe even sang one this morning. Darkness may seem to pass between us, but there's no change in his love. I'm not quoting that hymn, but precisely, but we had that thought. And he led us. But then it says that in verse 7, the Lord your God is bringing you somewhere else. So he's bringing us into a good land. Of course, the context of this is a literal good land. The people of Israel had an inheritance. God had promised it to Abraham. Think of the centuries since Abraham that have passed between then and the people hearing these words. Literally, they're going to see the fulfillment of God's promises to their ancestor. That God had said they were hundreds of years living in Egypt, just in Egypt alone, not to mention the years of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob before they even went down into Egypt for preservation of their lives at the time of Joseph. It's been centuries. Maybe it's been 500 years since the promise made to Abraham. And now, literally, they're going to see the fulfillment. In days, they're going to cross the Jordan River. And they're going to begin to possess the land, start to walk through what the Lord has promised to them for all this time. And the expectation is that it's everything that they need is there already. They are going to be able to farm the land. They are going to have plenty in the land. They are going to be able to pick from the fruit trees and the vines. They are going to be able to cultivate the land. They're going to be able to be prosperous in the land. And they're going to be able to mine metals out of the land, which are going to be effective for the tools that will make them prosperous, make it easier to do the work that they would do. And then it says in verse 10, there's this little, this really is the crux of the passage in verse 10. When you have eaten and are full, bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. You're moving forward. When you experience the fulfillment of God's promises of his faithful care and his faithful provision, bless the Lord. Have an attitude, have an expectation of looking for all the things, all the reasons for which you can thank the Lord. And really, this passage, chapter 8 all the way to chapter 11, if you just turn ahead to chapter 12, look for a minute at chapter 12. The end of chapter 11, the last verse of chapter 11, Moses says, be careful to observe all the statutes and judgments which I set before you today. And in chapter 12, he says, these are the statutes and judgments. And from chapter 12 on, for many chapters, there's a wide range of all these statutes and judgments and principles and guidelines. Here's how you treat your neighbor. Here's how you handle your possessions. Here's how you respond spiritually with various feasts and how you honor the Lord. Here's how you live your life in every part of it. So in a way, chapters 8 through 11 are sort of setting up where Moses wants to go with the people in his comments to them. He's saying to them, you're going to be entering this new land. And when you're in the new land, bless the Lord for all the goodness that he has shown to you. And by the time I get to chapter 12, I'm going to tell you all the ways you should live in that land, but I'm trying to set you up now with a mindset of how to honor the Lord in this new land that you're approaching. most of chapters 1 through 7 are reviewing their travels through the wilderness. They left Egypt, they came to the mountain where they received the Ten Commandments. There's a few reviews of that in these chapters as well. But there's a lot of description of all that is behind them. And now chapters 8 through 11 are kind of like, here's where we are in the present. Let's assess our situation. Let's understand what God's plans are for us. And the main theme of the rest of chapter 8 and of chapter 9 are two warnings. And the two warnings are really very instructive. So we're really going to look at those two warnings for a new year. We're going to apply them for ourselves in that way. Two warnings for a new year. Looking back, God has been faithful. Looking ahead, God is going to bring you where he wants you. But here are two warnings that we need to keep in mind as the people of God. So the first one comes right here in verse 11. It says, "Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God." That's the exact opposite of verse 10. "Bless the Lord your God" is the exact opposite of forgetting the Lord your God. And so he says, don't forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today, lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage." Just passing through a couple of these verses. Verse 15, he led them through that great and terrible wilderness. In verse 16, he fed them with the manna. Verse 17, if they forget these things, then you will say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. This is a real warning. This is a real aspect of concern. Successes that we have in life, we are very prone to interpret them as our own doing. It's actually a sociological phenomenon. Certain people have a sort of a mindset where all the successes that I have, that's because of me. The same person tends to say, all the failures that I've experienced, that's because of you. And literally, this is identified in sociology and psychology. People who look at life that way, right? I had trouble with this because of external circumstances, but I had success with this because of internal ability. It's really a very dangerous mindset, because we have to trust in the Lord at all times. We have to depend on him for everything. And so this is that first warning. When you have material success, when you have physical blessings that you enjoy, watch out. Don't fall into the trap of saying, look what I was able to do. We still need to be thankful. And being thankful means being dependent. And being thankful means being humble. And it means not resting in ourselves or trusting in ourselves that anything that went well is because of us. Beware that you don't forget the Lord, verse 11. And if we forget the Lord, verse 17, we will say in our hearts, we have done it. I have done it. Verse 18 continues, remember the Lord your God. It is he who gives you power to get wealth. Any successes that we have, we must continually reinterpret them in our minds. The Lord helped me. The Lord helped me. The Lord helped me in my job. The Lord helped me with my neighbors. The Lord helped me in my family. The Lord helped me in my investments. Whatever aspect of prosperity that we might see, we interpret them, we should, as the Lord did this for me. The Lord helped me do this. And if we train ourselves in this habit of thought, it will keep us. We'll think of this more and more often. The scripture in Hebrews chapter 5, I really love. It says that maturity comes in part. One of the aspects of maturity is when, by reason of use, we have exercised our senses. In that case, it says to discern between good and evil. But that kind of training, it says, by reason of use, just like physically we work out, we use our muscles so that we have greater strength later on. Just like we study for a test so that we'll have greater success later on. We work hard on something harder than we need to now because we want it to be easier later on. I tell my students, if you study hard now, the test is easy. If you don't study, the test is hard. Which one do you want? Do you want to have an easy test or a hard test? You got to have toughness sometime. Is it going to be now when you're practicing or later when the test comes? It's going to be one or the other. By reason of use, we train our senses. We exercise our thought process to put the Lord in there and to remember that He is the one who has done this and that for us and through us and with us, all the things that He has promised. Well, that's one warning. One warning is, in physical and material success and prosperity, remember the Lord. Don't forget the Lord. The next one actually takes parts of the next three chapters. We won't read that all, because I'd like to just summarize it. But it's so significant that he talks about it for three chapters, not just half a chapter. So we'll start reading in chapter 9, verse 1, and see the next warning. "Hear, O Israel, you are to cross over the Jordan today and go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than yourself, cities great and fortified up to heaven, a people great and tall, the descendants of the Anakim, whom you know and of whom you heard it said, who can stand before the descendants of Anak. Therefore, understand today that the Lord your God is He who goes over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them and bring them down before you. So you shall drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord has said to you. Do not think in your heart," this is the second warning, "after the Lord your God has cast them out before you, saying, 'Because of my righteousness, the Lord has brought me in to possess this land.' The answer really is, it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is driving them out before you. It is not because of your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart that you go in to possess their land, but because of the wickedness of these nations," and so on. Verse 6, "Therefore understand that the Lord your God is not giving you this good land to possess because of your righteousness, for you are a stiff-necked people." This is really the theme, you might say. If you had to pick one theme from chapters 9 through 11, it's this: you are stubborn. You are stiff-necked people. And he says that several times. He gives now examples, beginning in verse 7. Remember this time? You were stubborn. Remember this time? You were stubborn. Remember this time? You were stubborn. Over and over. It goes on through them making the golden calf and all their disobedience, a variety of things, where he says, all he's doing here is proving from chapter 9 to 11, you are stiff-necked people. It's an idiom that means, as we might picture it, right? If you're stiff-necked, you might have experienced that physically. One time I had that happen, and, you know, it happens in 5 seconds. Suddenly you just tweak your neck. And then for 3 weeks, you can't turn your neck. And you're driving, you know, you have to turn your whole body to drive because you can't just even turn sideways a little bit to look out your side window. Thank the Lord for mirrors. We'd have many more accidents from stiff-necked drivers. When you're stiff-necked, you can't see anybody else's perspective, much less the Lord's. When you're stiff-necked, it's always your view, right? You always see it your way, and you don't turn sideways. You don't look to see what's around you. You think of it your way. And the Lord says, don't think of any spiritual successes. We're going to apply it that way. Your spiritual successes are not because of your righteousness. Trust the Lord. Depend on the Lord. Stay low. Stay humble. Stay meek. Don't say, look at those enemies run. Ha ha, we're pretty good. The Lord gave us a lot of land because we're so righteous. More than once in Deuteronomy, it says, the Lord's not giving you this land because you're strong. You're weak people. It's just that the Lord loves you. Here it's, don't think that you're righteous. That's not why the Lord's giving you the land. He loves you, but it's not because of your righteousness. It's because of the wickedness of the others. He's going to remove them from the land. In another place, it actually says the land is spewing them out. Their abominations disgusted the land itself in that figure of speech. And so the Lord is removing those abominable practices from His chosen land, the place where His eyes are upon that land always, it says in another spot. And He's giving that to the people that He loves. So He says to them, don't trust in your spirituality either. Don't trust in your ability to be successful. I helped you. Don't trust in your ability to be righteous. You're stubborn. And if we remember that we tend to be stubborn, we will tend to be more successful. If we remember our stubbornness, we will be humble. If we remember our stubbornness, we will be moldable. We will be led. We will be used if we remember that we're stubborn people. If we go to chapter 10. Verse 12, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all His ways, and to love Him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command you today for your good. Indeed, heaven and the highest heavens belong to the Lord your God. Also, the earth with all that is in it. The Lord delighted only in your fathers to love them, and he chose their descendants after them, you, above all peoples, as it is this day. Therefore, circumcise the foreskin of your heart and be stiff-necked no longer. We often talk about the symbolism of circumcision that the men of Israel were subjected to, first at birth, but then as they traveled all through the wilderness, the practice of circumcision was abandoned, and as they entered the new land at the Jordan River prior to conquering Jericho, they had to experience this again. But really, it was always only a symbol. It was a symbol that they belonged to the Lord. There was nothing inherently special about it, except that it's what the Lord had given them as a sign that they were his. It's what he gave to Abraham as a sign. You are mine. This is going to mark you out as something different, some people group different from the rest of the nations around you. And as a symbol, it means that it's supposed to represent something that's going on in our hearts. And we might think of the New Testament applications of circumcision, but really, it's an Old Testament truth. Circumcise the foreskin of your heart. That is to say, cut off all that pride, proud stuff. Cut off all the flesh that is going to make you think of yourself before thinking of the Lord. Don't be stubborn anymore. Don't be stiff-necked anymore. And it talks about partiality. Don't be partial. The Lord's not partial, verse 17 and 18. Love the stranger, verse 19. You were strangers. Fear the Lord your God and serve him, verse 20. He is your praise, verse 21. Let's read that whole verse there, verse 21. He is your praise, and he is your God who has done for you these great and awesome things which your eyes have seen. Your fathers went down to Egypt with 70 persons, and now the Lord your God has made you as the stars of heaven in multitude. Therefore, you shall love the Lord your God, and so on into chapter 11. And the theme really continues, as mentioned, all the way into chapter 12, to present or set up chapter 12. At a time when we look back and look ahead, we recognize that the Lord always has his plans. God is completely outside of time, right? We have to live. You have a calendar, right? There's a little box around today on your calendar. And somewhere around midnight, there's a little door on your calendar that opens into the next day. And suddenly we're in the next day. And at some point, we'll have entered a new door for the last time. At some point, that will be our last day on the calendar. And we have lived all those many days, leaving one calendar box behind, entering the next one, for however many calendar boxes that was of our experience on this earth. But the Lord, he's completely outside of time. If you take all those little squares and you cut them up and you tape them together and you say, look, this is how many days on earth the Lord gave me. But it's as if the Lord is way back here. He's not in any of those boxes. He sees that one from the past and he sees that one from the future with equal vision. He's not living through it with us. He already knows with equal clarity what will take place 5 years from now and 500 years from now if the earth continues. Just as the things that took place 5,000 years ago are equally in the moment, if we might say. He was completely outside of all of that. He's just been watching it all as if you know, the old, well, most of you don't know anymore what a film strip was. When you would get to see a film strip in class, that was a big moment. We didn't have movie projectors and we certainly didn't have DVDs. But you'd have a little film strip, and it would just kind of click ahead. You know, there would be the bing, and the teacher would say, okay, turn the knob, and you'd see the next image on the film strip. That's our lives. But God, he just stretches out that entire strip of film, and he's looking at it all. But we have the responsibility of looking back and looking ahead. I'd like to turn back one moment to chapter 8, because sometimes at the cusp of a new year, we hear someone say, look at all the good blessings God has for you this year. And maybe on the cusp of a new year, it does not look promising. For many people, it does not look promising because of illness or because of family trouble or because of financial worries or many other things. There are 1,000 things that might make us have sorrow when we look ahead. But look at verse 16 again. We read part of this verse. He fed them in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you. And we might feel like that's what is going to happen in this new year. Maybe we're going to be filled with testing, times of trouble, times of uncertainty. We had uncertainty in 2018. Why should 2019 be any different? We don't really know all the things. We just know that God has a good plan, but we might be led through terrible troubles. Not only is the believer spiritually in the land of Jordan, the believer is still spiritually in the wilderness, too, where there is all this trouble, the poisonous snakes and the lack of water and the lack of food. But look at the end of verse 16, and this is what we carry with us no matter where we are at in the beginning of this year, to do you good in the end. This is his plan, to do us good in the end. And there may be all the troubles of the wilderness along our way. We might still be in the wilderness, we might feel, in this year to come. Not entering the good land yet, it might feel. But he will do us good in the end. And that's his plan. That's his desire. And may we honor him in the year to come.